Yours is a God of love. Occasionally, as we've been trying to get together, I hope to share with you that to really deeply understand this, you've got to make God an action word. Not love as a thing, but love as an action. Ours is a God who is ever in the process of loving. And the whole relationship inside God, the Trinity, is the Father, from all eternity being perfect. He knows himself completely. He knows everything that he is. And he expresses everything that he is in one word. And it, since he is perfect, it is a complete expression of his whole being. And he looks at this word, and not in a form of pride at all, but because God is all good, this word that he speaks is totally good. And so the Father offers all of himself in love to this word. And the word looks back at the Father and sees the goodness of the Father and offers all that he is to the Father in love. So the Father expresses it all in one word. And together they're united as they offer all of that they are. And this Spirit, this oneness that unites them, this is God's Spirit. And that's the Holy Spirit. And it's a spirit of love, a spirit of unity. So the Trinity is a love relationship. And it is this God that is creating us in his image. So we're made, and we're really made in the image of the Word, which means first we are made to be loved. And then as we allow love to come into our life, we're then made to respond with love. We're caught up in this inner love of the Trinity in the correct order. We don't first go out to love others or to love God. We first allow God to love us. You're made this way. There's something just ever so wonderful about knowing that you are perfectly loved if you'll allow yourself to experience this in Jesus. And the reason it's wonderful is that this is you being you, possibly for the first time in your life. When you submit your whole being to Jesus and say, here, touch it all in love, my faults, my failures, my present, my past, all of it I am, embrace me in all of the love of you. There's a warmth in that. And we very rarely allow this to happen. There's areas we say, no, Jesus shouldn't love this part of me and don't love my past and don't love these feelings. But there is a real warmth when you just allow it to happen. And there's sort of a real relaxing because for once we're not struggling against to be something other than God made us. God basically created you in his own image and you're made in the image of the Word, and the Word is the one the Father looks at and gives all of his love to. Therefore, at this moment, you're allowing the Father to do precisely what he's made you to do, to give you love before you respond in any form at all. Now that's so you can just relax and get caught up in this. So, we're created by God to live in order, in a correct set of relationships, in shalom. And that is, here's God, here's us, and here's others. We're supposed to have love flow down to us, be able to return this love to ourselves, and to have love flow out to others. This same love as it's filling us. This is a correct relationship. We're allowing God to love us. We accept this love and offer it to ourselves and then offer this love to the world also. And there's no static. There's no pressure. There's no pain when we allow this to happen. The brief seconds that if you would ever allow it or have allowed it to occur in your life. This is the order, the unity, the shalom, the right relationships for which God created us. However, man refused this unity. We've talked about the origination of sin, the original sin in the universe. We then brought it more real for us and talked about the great reality of the fact that sin originates outside us, in our own lives. That's a lack of proper relationships. Let's start. I'll give you a quick definition. Not getting the love that we need. From our parents, We weren't given all of the love we needed. Why? Because they didn't. They weren't capable of giving us all the love because their parents didn't give it to them. But we don't have to go into their why. The big thing of your life is when you were a child, you weren't getting all the love and acceptance you needed from the moment you were born. Not because your parents were lousy, but simply because they were human and had the sin originate outside them. Some moments they'd give you what you needed, but at other moments they wouldn't. They'd give you some of the love, some of the acceptance. And at some moments you'd be crying out to be loved, and they wouldn't be giving you any because they were caught up in their own problems. And so you hurt in your own gut. And there wasn't a right relationship. From the outside world, pain was coming in. And it was coming into you, and somehow your relationships were being broken. And you started taking the blame for this. So you began judging you weren't getting the love you needed because there was something wrong with you. I'm saying you here, if you're normal, these are the things I live through in most people. So the relationship with self is broken. Now, the relationship with others is incorrect, it's faulty. We can generalize that and figure what our parents do, the world does. The world doesn't always like us, and sometimes we really feel the world dislikes us. And finally, if the world dislikes us and there's something wrong with us and we have trouble accepting all of ourself or ourself at all, the last one is, then if we're this lousy, how can God love us? And we really don't feel comfortable around the thought of God anymore, and it's all shattered. And the good relationships that God created us to live are broken. And that's where we're at. We then start off in this fractured state. We respond. Now we're desperate. We need love. We need acceptance. We need approval. We need someone to tell us that we're okay. And so we in turn go out and we're searching for love. You are made to be loved perfectly. And nothing but being loved perfectly will satisfy you. And so rather than start the relationship in the right way, we're made in the image of God, in the image of the Word, and that means letting the Father love us. That's where it starts. Rather than going there, we go out to the world now, and we go into the world, and we desperately look for things that will be our answer. And we try to get the love we need from the world. We're misusing the world. Rather than offering it love, we're trying to use the world to give us love. But it can't give us what we need. We lean on people. Very, very often I will have a husband or a wife in who doesn't understand how they have absolutely drained the other party in the marriage because rather than offer love and receive love, they've just gone out to the other person and tried to drain, to get the love they needed. And they've just been, they thought that it was a perfect marriage for years, but they have just been a leech, sucking the other person dry, empty. And it hasn't been a healthy relationship. There hasn't been a mutual flow. There's just been a very sick need, and a sick need to try to get everything I need from this one person, and it's hurt. So, basically, well, anyway, we then, not being born in a unity, continue this whole process of sin, which is taking less love than we need into our own life. And this is evil. It's continuing to live in a state of disorder when God intends us to live in this order of the great relationship. God, us, and others. Love coming from God, love being offered to ourselves and flowing through us to others. Sin is the anything broken in that. Once we get into this state, we're going to look at these terms a little bit more. Once we get into this state, there's no escape. There's nothing I can do to undo my past. There is no way I can go to the day I was like in my past, just to show how human things can affect this. Shortly after I was born, I needed surgery. I had a tear duct that wasn't operating. and I was taken from my mother and in a major hospital about 50 miles away and operated on, and I was in the hospital for a while. Well, those nurses couldn't give me the physical love that I needed. And so there's no way I can go back into my past and say, hey, how can I fill out the needs I had the second week of my life to be loved and didn't get? What can I do today to go back in my past and put that love there? And yet those memories, any psychiatrist and every psychiatrist will tell us, the memories of that need continue to affect me today. The love I didn't receive in the first 2 weeks of my life affected my ability to accept love and to give love today. Now, what can I do to escape that? What can I do to escape the moments when I just was filled with selfishness and blew up and got mad at somebody, got mad at my mom, made her cry? How can I erase those memories? And once this disunity comes into my life, I'm helpless before it, and I can't really escape it. But because we don't have a God, but rather a loving Father who does care about the state of His children, we're not isolated in that condition. Our Father has acted. And He has taken the initiative to re-cement the relationship with us. We've shared this, how wonderfully what really happens is pictured in the Adam and Eve story. Adam and Eve, that's man and woman, so a man, it could be any one of us, a woman, any one of us. We don't accept all the love that we need. And so there's an emptiness inside us. And once there's an emptiness inside me, parts of me that I don't feel are lovable, then I'm not comfortable in the presence of a God who is perfect love. The moment Adam and Eve looked elsewhere but to God for their love, they turned to the world. The world is good because God made it. But it couldn't give them the love they needed. Once they did this, they had to hide from God. Why? Because God is perfect love. And inside them, there's a little area of emptiness now that they don't feel deserves to be loved. There could be like, I'm just picturing guts. That would be their whole inside. All of that deserved to be loved, but at the start, there's this one little area of emptiness. But God's perfect love. And if you're going to be in His presence, you've got to be loved completely. And they don't feel that this area deserves to be loved, so they can't come near God, so they hide from Him. There's an area of themselves that they don't want others to see. They can't love this part of themselves right now, so they are ashamed of their nakedness. They're ashamed to stand absolutely exposed. And it don't take this physically. Take it with their whole personality, the whole being. They're ashamed to stand and show all they are to one another. And that's so real. We play games from one another. We're ashamed of ourselves. I hide my fears, my failures, my guilts, my greeds from people. And I just let him see the nice part. And then they start blaming one another and the whole relationship is broken. God comes to re-cement this. So they're ashamed of themselves. And then, you know, Adam right away blames Eve. Cain murders Abel. And the disunity that's in me, sooner or later, is going to cause me to go out to you in anger, resentment, or to push you away in fear. And all the relationships are broken. The only way it can be re-cemented is the way our Father did it, and He sends Jesus. God Himself speaks a word of love spoken to us in our imperfection, telling us that He doesn't mind our imperfection because He takes it upon Himself. Jesus comes and He weds Himself to a limited flesh. That's the great sign of the beginning of His life. He's born. He's born into a race where everybody's in sin, and He accepts that. That's God's way of telling you that Jesus identifies with you in your weakness. God's way of telling me that He doesn't reject me in my weakness, in my sin. that even this area that doesn't deserve love, God's breaking through my defenses to tell me, hey, he loves me. And Jesus took my limited flesh upon himself to help me see that. More than that, though, when he walked this earth, his public ministry, he ministers to sinners. He doesn't condemn them. He doesn't preach to them. He doesn't tell people what they're doing wrong unless they think they have no sin. People who know they're sinners, Jesus comes over and he puts his arm around them and invites them out to dinner, which was the deepest sign at that time to show, I am one with you. I find no fault in you. Somebody gave me that phrase a few weeks ago as an ultimate way of communicating acceptance that a group had. They would look at one another and say, I find no fault in you as a real person. Well, that's what this action of Jesus shows. He would find prostitutes. He was criticized for this. And the mafia. And he'd come over and just put his arms around him. No demands. No saying, okay, clean up your act. You know, go make justice. Not what you hear from the pulpits. What you hear from the pulpits in the name of Jesus, I can't find anywhere in the New Testament. What Jesus did was he came to sinners and he ate with them. He socialized with them. That's showing God's attitude to you. There's nothing that makes me uncomfortable when somebody says, I like you. And that's what Jesus said, as well as I love you. You can make me uncomfortable sometimes saying I love you, because you can follow it up with, and because I love you, it's important that I point out to you that. And then comes everything that in love they want me to correct. But when someone says, I like you, and that's what Jesus said first. He really showed the like with these all the wrong crowd. So he's ministering to sinners. So he's touching us in this area that we want to hide from God. That's the area God needs. And then from the cross he empties himself to show that God doesn't like this, just he loves it. He takes all of his being and he hands it to each of us. He empties himself of all of his being to all of us in our sin, in our weakness, in our imperfection. This is what Jesus is offering us. So, God comes back into our life before man has done anything. It's so important to go back and look at the history of God's people. God started calling Abraham, he freed him from Moses, gave him David, and the people loused up again and again and again. So you don't have to do anything. The result of their lousing up again and again and again was that God came himself and wed himself to their flesh. The world did nothing to deserve Bethlehem. It was the need of sin that demanded Bethlehem. You don't have to do anything to merit Jesus as your forgiveness. It's your need to be healed, your need to be whole, your need to feel shalom that causes a father who cares to speak that word that is Jesus to us. Jesus then offers us his spirit, and that transforms us. As the stable is transformed into the tabernacle, you and I are transformed by the Spirit of Jesus. We can be aware of the filth on the floor of our lives. And yet, if we don't look there, if we look to the Spirit of Jesus and believe in the goodness of this Spirit, we can accept our holiness. We can be ever so aware of the sinners that we are, but we can believe in Jesus. And because he is God, we can believe that his holiness is infinitely greater than our capacity to sin. And so there's something good in us to celebrate. No matter how great I score on the scale of sin, that's a limited ability, and Jesus is unlimited. So he's still outdoing me in holiness. And so I can celebrate. I don't have to look to my failure. I can accept the love that God is pouring within me. I can believe that I have the very Spirit of God, the very Spirit of Jesus, because of Jesus, because the Father is sending him into my life. I can celebrate, therefore, what I am. I can accept me. So the love of Jesus then rekindles this one. And my relationships with the world are rekindled. I have a mission for you to give you this love, as you have a mission for me to give me that same love in you. Jesus, therefore, undoes the effects of sin in our life. The church, God's people, was created to prolong in space and time the mission of Jesus. That simply means so that in Enid in 1977, the love that our Father spoke to us through Jesus could be spoken to you and could be spoken to me. That's why the church exists. Jesus came with a mission of healing. He preached so that healing could be offered and shalom result. The church is Jesus coming into your life and my life today. And so this is one of the missions. It really is, the church has a mission of reconciling. And incidentally, this sacrament, penance, carries a new name. It used to have two names in the past. It's lost one of those. It has two names in the present, one that isn't in this outline anywhere, because we didn't have it when I made the outline 4 years ago. It used to be called confession. That name shouldn't be used. I will use it more often than anything because it's so ingrained into my past, I'll use it by error. The names of this sacrament now are, the preferable name isn't here at all, it's reconciliation. It's uniting again, reconciling, making one. That's the new term for it. Reconciliation, because that's the mission of Jesus. Penance makes me think of going and, you know, just whipping myself and doing all sorts of painful things so I can win pardon. That's my picture of the word penance. It really doesn't deal with that. And the term confession has been dropped completely because that's the least important thing of this sacrament. And we made it so crucial because it was our part and the most difficult part for us very often. The church is supposed to continue the mission of Jesus, and Jesus came to reconcile. To reconcile God to man to himself, and then man because of this to others. You and I have been made part of the church by baptism. We're supposed to first experience this reconciliation through the Spirit of Jesus, not just have a lot of ideas. The church is to be an experience. And secondly, we have a mission in the church to offer this reconciliation to others, to be instruments of reconciling, instruments of unity, of announcing in our families and in our communities a oneness, of offering them love, not preaching it from soap operas. Against this background, sin then becomes for us the failure to live our Christian vocation. Sin to me is pretty much a matter of being rather than doing. And this will be one of the very important distinctions I hope to make. Looking ahead, and when I get to it, I won't have to spend as much time then. Most of us were taught to see sin as something that was done, and therefore it becomes a thing. Just for those of you who are Catholic, remember the old examination of conscience. How often did I do it? Was it serious? That takes sin and makes it an action out here that I can look at as a thing apart from me. Sin isn't that at all. Sin is being less a person. The best example I've come up with is my old picture of the balloon, where you have one of these animal balloons that is supposed to inflate, and fully inflated, it's supposed to have ears, you know, and a little nose coming out this way. And to get this, you got to blow air into it. If I didn't blow enough air in so that this air isn't inflating, this balloon isn't what it's supposed to be. When I have turned not to God's Spirit, the nice thing about this is that
Love is the action of the Spirit, and the Spirit, you can use the word breath and wind. When I don't allow God's breath to blow through me, I'm not developing, I'm not being blown up to be the full person I'm supposed to be. When I go out to the world can't give me all the love I need. It's inadequate for this. And so there are needs within me, and I'm suffering. And it would be just like that balloon. Now, every second, that balloon will never burst. That's an infinitely bigger and bigger one. But I can never go back, this is what I was saying, in time, and put in the air that was supposed to go in, let's say, 5 minutes ago, if it didn't get enough for that ear. From now on, that ear is always going to be down from what it should be. Sin is me. Sin is this. It's being less a person than I'm supposed to be. In the Bible, there are many words in the Old Testament from the Hebrew language that cover our word sin. One of the good ones, and it's used very much, one of my favorite is missing the mark. You're shooting at a bullseye. The distance that your arrow is off from the center, that's sin. And that would fit this complete. How much am I missing the mark from the full person that God wants me to be because I have not allowed love to come into my life and to develop me as love is supposed to develop me? That's the degree of sin that is present in my life. Sin, therefore, is me. It's my not being the person I'm supposed to be. It's not a thing divorced from me. It's not something outside me. We'll look to how, especially much more next time, but we'll have a few things to say on this yet today, why we had these standards and these questions, and they still can be very helpful questions. So sin is the failure to live my Christian vocation. That's what it says here. And I like that because it can still stand. Because what is the vocation of a Christian? It's to be loved. And then to offer this love. To be loved by God. And when I haven't allowed God to love me, then I'm simply not being everything I'm supposed to be. And that is sin. And that means I am less a person and less a Christian. I have a daily struggle to allow myself to be loved. That's one of the limitations of the body. We forget this and we just sometimes accent too much the spirit. You try being kind. You try loving others when you have the flu or diarrhea. And if you just picture this, it'll help you remember that you're one whole person and that your body has an effect upon the whole person that you are. And one of the effects of having a body is that it's limited to this second right now. And you can't act as a total person. Part of you can really want to love, and yet another part of you can be depressed or afraid. So you can only offer so much love to your children, to your parents, to your neighbors, to the Christian community. And there's always the need then for more love to flow in us. We don't commit ourselves completely. And I can give myself to you in love today and tomorrow turn my back on you. I've got to be careful that I don't do this with people. I have a tendency to do it. We all do, but I certainly do. And it can be a very grave error. So just the fact that I allow myself to be loved at some moments doesn't mean there's no sin in my life. This isn't a decision that I've just made and it always stays. There are many, many moments when I've turned to the world in love, many moments when I've turned and not been everything I should be. And I can be less the person I'm supposed to be by omission or commission. Omission means I don't do what I'm supposed to do. Commission means I do what I'm not supposed to do. Let me give examples of this. I can fail to give the witness that I should. I'm not offering love that is needed. And so I give the impression that I don't really care. You can see someone really hurting and not care enough to go over and find out why they're hurting. That's failing to love. And I'm not supposed to fail to love. I'm supposed to love the world the way Jesus has loved it, and my actions aren't showing that. We've used better examples than this. I'd say that in many ways, I'd say a very serious failure of omission is just the way Catholics sit at Mass, so far apart from one another. We're failing to show that we physically care to be the body of Christ that we are just by the way we enter a church and don't want anything to do with one another. That's a failure of omission very, very much. That's affecting all of us. How much stronger and healthier and happier and more complete and rounder we would be if we could start undoing this. If you've ever seen it done, it's really great. I used to attend Mass in Baltimore in this huge church in an area that had become a slum. And so no more than one-tenth of the church would be filled on Sunday. And you didn't have a choice. If normally Catholics would have been all over that whole church and nobody would have hurt anybody, nobody could have helped anybody. Well, they roped off the whole church. And they opened up the pews three at a time, three pews, so people had it from the front, too. People had to sit together. You weren't put in a particular pew. You had your choice of two or three. But you were put close to one another, and people were going to be sitting next to you. And so maybe the first seven pews or ten pews were all that were filled, but there were people on your left and on your right, and you could hear them. And when they sang, you could hear them, you could feel them. And boy, it built up a real spirit, and we reinforced one another. When we scatter all over because I'm afraid, I don't want you to touch me. And we Americans are very, very fragile on this, much more than most other cultures. I sure experienced this because I don't, until God started coming in my life in many ways, I didn't even feel at peace if my mother touched me. We withdraw, we pull into ourselves as little islands. Many other peoples are much freer for physical expression. You know, think of the Spanish, the Italians, the Russians, when two men greet one another, they're hugging, and how free people are to cry.